Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Jeff Jackson, the CEO of the Edmonton Oilers, will pop on with Millard and Shannon. It's 100% hockey. I had a request over social media that we do a mailbag episode at some point. People have questions that they want answered, John. Some of it involves hockey, what we're seeing on the ice, and some of us, your expertise in the television side. Would you be open to a mailbag episode?
Sure.
That didn't sound like you were overly embracing it.
Well, tell you what, can we at least be more creative when we do it than the mailbag? Can we find something that we have fun with that we do it, and then we'll send it out and see what people. Let's put our creative juices together to talk about it in a certain way. And then we can, you know, talk about it, whether it's TV or hockey or just life, Darren. Because you know what? We're both experts at life.
I have a couple of questions that I will submit on the life side that I would appreciate your answer on. No, it came from a listener, and then somebody else responded to it, and it sort of morphed into this conversation on social media.
Wow. What else did George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon want to know?
We don't communicate a lot, and usually when I see George or Kelly coming my way, my first reaction is, "What did I do? What did I say?"
Oh, that's not true.
No,
they adore you.
But they're just busy. That's what I mean. They've got other things going on, especially now with the trade deadline. We are very close, and I'm surprised, which means. Once we publish this, there'll be three trades. But I'm surprised there's not more percolating.
Well, I think there is lots percolating. I think we saw that before the break from that perspective. And those trades kind of got everything set. But now what's happening is, and we have been a little repetitive about this, is that there are still teams trying to make the decision whether they're in the playoff hunt or not. I mean, so, like, what are the Ottawa Senators right now? Brady Tkachuk is hurt, won't play tonight against Winnipeg. They're out of the playoffs, but they're really darn close. Are they a buyer or a seller?
Buyer. Even more reason to buy with Brady Tkachuk hurt.
Well, so... Those are issues. I mean, Columbus and Detroit right now are the two teams that seem to be doing the right thing as far as in the Eastern Conference. In the Western Conference...
Don't forget about the Rangers. Rangers.
Well, Rangers have already been buyers. Mm-hmm. Or I don't want to call the Rangers buyers. I want to call the Rangers changers because that's what they were. They didn't necessarily buy. They changed some things. So because when you think about... who's not there and who's there, not just in the last 2 weeks, but in the last 3 months, then the Rangers are a different animal for me because of that. Because Chris Drury has had a different attitude, I think, than a lot of managers.
Everybody below Boston in the East is a Montreal, Philadelphia, Islanders, Pittsburgh, Buffalo.
I would argue that Boston should be. You know, with Lindholm hurt, McAvoy hurt, you know, blowing leads like they had. Swayman hasn't had a great year since he signed the new deal. This is a chance for Boston to use a few of their assets to work towards next year. The Boston Bruins, so, but this goes back to the philosophy of, and Ray talked about it on Monday on the show, is for some teams, is just getting to the dance, is that enough of an accomplishment?
Well, it depends on how long you've been excluded from the dance, too.
For instance?
Like Detroit and Ottawa, they need to get back into the dance.
Okay. But I put it to you that a team like Boston, who are always in the playoffs, but the Boston Bruins are not going to win the Stanley Cup this year. And last I checked, and I probably went to Google here a couple times the last couple days. Last I checked, the ultimate goal is to win the Stanley Cup.
No, that's changed. I know people will hold themselves to the highest level, but in a 32-team league, there can be success barriers that are reached that don't include winning the Stanley Cup.
Even for a team like the Boston Bruins?
Yes.
No, I don't buy that. I mean, I buy that for, like, I buy that for Philadelphia. You know, I buy that who have told their fan base this is going to be a long, arduous process, and we are pointed in the right direction, and we are doing the right thing. But I look at, I mean, look at Pittsburgh. Where is Pittsburgh in all this?
Well, Pittsburgh's a stellar.
I know. So, but there are, I still think there are, what about the Islanders?
They're a stellar.
Okay, we're going to, you have to phone Lou and tell him that.
Get him on the phone. I'll explain it to him. Your defense is decimated. You don't have a chance. Retool or use this to your advantage. And that's that. I'll put Boston in that same mix. Boston's overachieved the last four seasons. The last Boston Bruins have overachieved the last four seasons.
We expected them to bug me about Boston.
Before I agree with you, let me make my point. It's finally happening where they're playing to the level that a lot of us thought they would. Yeah. Use it to your advantage. And yes, I did agree with you on that.
You didn't originally.
Yeah, it's better radio, podcasty. In the West, Anaheim, Seattle, Nashville, Chicago, San Jose, there's more sellers than people want to admit.
What about Utah?
See, Utah, I would position it as Utah's already bought by getting the two pieces back on the blue line.
What, Marino?
They've already added. So they don't have to sell, but they don't have to buy either.
So getting Durzi and Marino back helps.
Yeah.
Okay. What about St. Louis, who, by the way, I've watched all three St. Louis games since the break. They are playing great, and yet we keep hearing that St. Louis is going to be a seller.
Okay, Braden Schenn's got two more years left. What's the hurry?
Oh, I think Braden Schenn might get traded.
I know, but what's the hurry there?
Well, I 5 years is a long time since they won the Stanley Cup. Doug Armstrong wants to win the Stanley Cup again. And I think I think that's a really good example, is that Doug Armstrong is one of those guys that says, I'm not in here just to make the playoffs. I'm here to build a championship.
I think we have to change or move the goalpost a little bit on what is a successful season. It's very different for various teams. And making the playoffs or winning a round can still be a successful season when you've got 32 teams in the NHL.
Well, we might disagree on that.
Are we fighting?
No. No.
I'd love a fight.
Don't worry.
For a fight. Jeff Jackson.
You can lose that again, too. So that's fine.
You're lucky because Jeff just joined the waiting room. because I could go down this path with you.
But, I'll tell you what, Jeff Jackson's a good man to join us after his team's lost three straight. So actually, four straight, but three since the deadline, since the break.
Got to take on the midseason break as well. Get to it at some point today. The CEO of hockey operations for the Edmonton Oilers is coming up. Jeff Jackson with 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Back at 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. I haven't talked to Jeff Jackson. I haven't talked to you in a long time. Like, you've had another career since I last chatted with you.
Yeah, we used to see each other a lot in Toronto, yeah. Especially when I was working for the team and your wife was working in the organization and doing great. And when you brought her name up today, I think finally of Jen at the time she was with the Marlies. But yeah, we haven't seen each other. And then you've been in Vegas for how long now? Like 5, 6, 7 years?
Is it 6 years. Yeah. Sixth season.
Feels like 12.
You should feel like you should be the people that I work with. It's like 17.
Yeah, I bet. All right, let's get the tough stuff out of the way. What the heck's going on with your hockey club?
Yeah, the three games after the break here have not been our best for sure. And I it's coming back after a couple weeks off and two afternoon games, 1 o'clock games back to back. Probably not the most perfect schedule for us, but no excuses. We just haven't played very well. And we played a good first period last night and had a couple breakdowns early and got behind 3-1. And you know, it's tough against a team like Tampa. So we gotta sort of stay the course, figure it out. You know, don't panic. We do need to figure out how we're going to get some secondary scoring. Some of that's just sort of dried up a little bit. And we have the guys to do it, whether it's, you know, Zach Hyman or Nuge or Arvidsson or Skinner. We've got guys that can put the puck in the net and contribute, and we're just not getting any of that right now. And I think we just got to figure it out.
As a former player, you know that the players know better than the coaches or the managers when things are going bad. And this is your core leadership group. This is one of the best in the NHL. They've got to be so much aware of what's going on, correct?
Yeah, and they've been through it. It's sort of funny because losing three in a row, the last time I think we did that was in the finals last year where, you know, we sort of got dominated. And so what we're hopeful is that our leadership group, which is very strong and deep, there's a, you know, you've got the guys up front and we've got Ekholm and Nurse and Kulak and on the back end, to just name, you know, three of the guys. But we have a very deep leadership group who went through a lot of stuff last year and the year before. So last night, you know, on the plane over from Tampa here, the mood was fine. The guys, you know, they're not losing their minds. They know what they got to do. So I think going through what the team's gone through over the years, especially last year, and fighting back a lot beginning of the year, then we had a stretch in the middle of the year where we were in a bit of a slump, and then in the playoffs we had to come back in a couple series. So drawing on those experiences from our leadership group will help us, you know, sort of claw our way out of this right now.
Do you consciously reflect on what happened in the final and say, okay, it's February, like, it's not that big of a deal, or you can diminish it, not saying that losing three games in a row isn't huge?
Yeah, I mean, I think in this league, anytime you string together a few losses, it you know, becomes concerning. That's just the way it is. You know, the focus on the team and the media and the fans and everything, it sort of shifts. So we're cognizant of it, but like we have to work in, not in a vacuum, but like we have to sort of close out that outside noise and just sort of focus on what we need to do to have a cliche as it sounds, go out tomorrow night and win the first period and then, you know, win the second period. Sometimes when you're in a little bit of a funk and you're not playing great, you just got to break it down into those like smaller elements. So, but yeah, I mean, it seems like a long, long time ago that we were in the finals, but it wasn't. It was just a few months ago. So
I just feel like fans don't want to hear, oh, they're not taking it totally seriously. But the grand scheme of things, we're still 20 games to go in the regular season. It's not the end of the world.
No, I mean, that's what I mean about putting, like, sort of shutting out the noise. Like, the staff, the coaches, the players, management, like, we're not being dismissive of losing three in a row, but we're also know that we have a good team. And we there's good teams all through the league who've gone through this year. Vegas had a stretch. LA had a stretch. You can name a whole bunch of teams that where they didn't play well for four or five games and they didn't win. And anybody can beat anybody in this league every night, despite there being like better teams than others. Like, there's surprises every night.
So the new voice in the room is your general manager. Can that be viewed in this situation as a positive? Somebody with an outside voice about how to manage these situations?
Yeah, I mean, Stan, you know, he spent almost 20 years in Chicago in various roles, obviously as a general manager for 10, and they had their ups and downs, and they won three cups, and they went to conference final and lost a couple times, and they, you know, got beat out in the first round one year when they were supposed to be a really good team. So he's been through a lot of the gamut too, and he's a very, very sort of calm and pragmatic that doesn't overreact to things. And we spent a lot of time together. We talk a lot, and I think we have tons of confidence in what Stan's, what he brings to the table, both from a, like, kind of a calming perspective and also just like looking at things very pragmatically and say, okay, like, here's the issue today. Like, how are we going to deal with it?
How would his approach be? Just, I mean, cause you've run in parallel courses, you know, you were a former player, was an agent. He became a lifelong management guy. In these parallel careers, how do you and Stan complement each other?
Yeah, I mean, I think I go back to the fact that, like, having been a player gives you one perspective, albeit it was a long time ago, but you still have that sort of like understanding of the mentality that sort of never really changes, but probably more the agent part of it for a dozen years where, you know, you've got to deal with all the teams and you've got to deal with personality on your clients and communication with the clients. And what I see and what I saw before when I was an agent dealing with Stan in Chicago is, like, he was a very good communicator, and he's not sort of working in a vacuum. He's very inclusive with the staff. He's inclusive with players and coaches, and they feel connected. And that to me is like where we dovetail together, because I think that that's like a critical piece of having a really strong organization, is like, you're not working in silos. You're working together. And of course everyone has their job and you let them do it and you help them when they need help. But I think I bring my player and agent experience to the table, and he brings his managerial winning experience to the table, and it's a good fit together, and we work really well together.
Were you naturally calm, or are you naturally calm?
Yeah. I mean, I've got a fuse, but it's long, and I don't react or overreact to things. And in this business, I think that helps, because if you start to get reactive and listen to all the noise, like you can make mistakes. And everybody makes mistakes in a game of hockey. Like, there's not a manager or coach who's done these jobs where they haven't signed players that they wish they hadn't signed, or they missed out on getting a guy that they really wanted because they weren't quick enough or whatever. Like, everybody makes, just like players, everyone makes mistakes every shift on the ice. It's a game of mistakes. So what you have to do is, like, try to take that in and learn from it, and then just move on and don't make those same mistakes again.
Well, I tell you what, though, when you look at your demeanor, I've known Stan a long time. You look at Stan's demeanor, and then you put Chris in that, Chris Knobloch in that equation. I mean, between the three of you, you might have a pulse of 33.
Yeah, and the calmness is like, I think it, we all display that differently, but like there is a lot of passion beneath it, and you know, caring, and I'm hyper competitive, and I know so is Chris and Stan, and it just manifests itself in different ways for different people. So the three of us we're not hot headed. We don't spend a lot of time talking in the media unnecessarily, but yeah, we care and we want the best for the Edmonton Oilers and try to put the best team on the ice. So, but I like working with people that are like-minded, and it sort of goes through our staff, you know, like Rick Pracy is very much the same way. He's a smart, thoughtful guy. And then you could say Warren Reichel isn't like us because as our director, but he's a smart and thoughtful guy, but he's very funny and he brings that element. So I really like the group we have, Keith Gretzky, Bill Scott, like right on through our group. We work really well together. So, and everybody keeps each other honest.
Were you like that because as a player?
As a player, I was not calm. I was trying to survive in the league, and the only way I could do that was like play hard every single shift and every day in practice. So I was a pain in the ass to teammates in practice because I was trying to like show the coach to put me in the lineup or put me up higher in the lineup, and I was trying to stay in the league. So I did what I had to do. But I was a good teammate. I just was like, I wasn't. I learned to be calm when I was a lawyer, you know, because you're dealing with complex issues and clients who demand answers quickly. And I had some good mentors at my law firm, and I just started that approach, and that's what's carried me through to now.
What's the most stressful job that you've had?
I would say being an assistant GM in Toronto. To be honest, like it was a great learning experience for me. But you know, I was there with Ferg, with John Ferguson. The team was in a bit of turmoil. He got fired. Cliff came in as an interim GM. Then Berkey came in. Media is what it is in Toronto. High expectations, lots of coverage. I found that job to be very stressful, to be honest. And I worked for three GMs in 5 years. So that's a hard thing to do because you really don't get momentum in your role, right? You're sort of starting over again. So, I found that, but I went looking back on it. It was a great stepping stone and a learning experience for me.
Are there comparables in Edmonton? I mean, the media isn't as big as Toronto. The fan base is as passionate. So are there things that you can draw from Toronto that help you in Edmonton?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways it's similar. It's a Canadian hockey market that cares about their team and, you know, has had the team win at some point. You know, it was quite a long time ago, but they expect the team to be good and they're very passionate fans. And we see it every game. You see it, but through the playoffs last year, just how, you know, all of Alberta and lots of Canada sort of embraced our team, but in the market and there's high expectations and that's from fans and media. And we know that. So yes, learning what I learned in Toronto sort of has like readied me for, you know, what we deal with day to day in Edmonton. And it's something that just comes with part of the job.
A look inside the soul of Jeff Jackson. Didn't know we were going to get it all psychological today. We continue on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. You brought up the playoffs last year. When did you turn the page from that final?
I had to do it the next day, basically. We flew home and then we had a quick turnaround and we immediately flew to Vegas for the draft, and then we had the draft and we had free agency. So after free agency, I was into talking to potential general manager candidates and went through that process. So last summer we had Leon negotiations that started once Stan was hired. Then we had We had the offer sheet situation, which we dealt with for a couple of weeks, and then back to Leon, and that was then we're at the end of August, right? So I think probably in the fall, to be honest, is when I when you start to think about, okay, we've gone through.
Were you able to grieve what happened like in that final at all?
I don't think so, to be honest. Like you just sort of like put your work boots on, and like you gotta do the next thing the next day, and you don't have time to think about it. But I'm sitting here today in Fort Lauderdale. Like I went for a walk this morning, and that's when it was sort of reminding me of how much time we spent here last June, and sort of reminiscing with myself about like how like we felt about, you know, game 5 and game 7 and our expectation that we were going to win and it didn't happen. So I'm not sure that like any of us have really, you need to park it and move on. You can't wallow in it, but I always just say it was an amazing experience to go through and very joyful, but very like heartbreaking at the same time. So, you know, when you get that close and don't win, it's hard.
And then in Tampa last night, you walk in the press box and there you see Scotty Bowman and he's done it 9 times. And you say, what's the magic elixir, right?
Yeah, I had a nice chat with Mr. Bowman last night. And obviously Stan went over to visit his parents, and then his dad's like, you know, he's at a lot of games in Tampa. He's a rock star in that arena. Everyone, you know, comes up to him and says, "Hey, Mr. Bowman, glad to see you." But he had some, you know, nice words about the team. He thinks we have a very good team. We just got to sort of right the ship a little bit and don't get overreactive. But yeah, I mean, he winningest coach of all time, obviously. And, looks great. He's in his early 90s and still sharp as a tack and knows the game like, you know, as good as anybody.
Jeff Jackson with us on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Does returning to the scene help you right now? Like bring up some of the good feelings as well?
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe that's part of what I was getting at before. It's like you realize what we were able to accomplish, even though we didn't accomplish the ultimate thing last year, but it brings back some positive feelings about, you know, how good our team was. And we have basically like, you know, the core group is the same. And, you know, before the break, I think we were the third overall in the league at the break. We have a good team, so we just have to, you know, draw upon our past, and hopefully the players have some of that where they're like they're thinking about it from a positive point of view. And it seems to me, but based on, you know, talking to the guys last night, and I saw some of them this morning, like they're feeling fine. Like we have a mandatory day off today, and then they'll be back on the ice tomorrow, and then we got to go get a win tomorrow night.
How good has Leon been?
Unreal. Like, he's just been a machine, and you know, he scores every game, it seems like, and he's playing with pace and playing 200 feet, and he's been really good for us.
I don't know how he finds the net from such a sharp angle, and I've looked at multiple goals, and he never misses the net.
Yeah, he's a sniper, and he can. I can't see how he does it with that big paddle of his, but he does it, and he puts it in spots where you don't think it can go. And even last night's goal, like he gets it and he buries it quick. Like he's got a great release. So he's having one of his best seasons, and I'm sure he'll just continue to do that through the last, you know, 25 odd games here.
How much internal discussion is there that the two stars need to play together? I have my opinion. I'll give it to you if I haven't given it to you 20 times in the last year anyway. Where do you see that, Jeff?
Well, I think we prefer to have them play a part. and have their, you know, run their own lines, and they're both capable of like driving line, and then throw them together, you know, after a PK or after a TV timeout or near, like sort of sporadically, but strategically during games, rather than sort of putting them on a line and leaving them there for, you know, games on end. So, I think that that's the way that we'll probably end up going with it, but they, you know, they do get thrown together. They play together enough, you know, they have their PP time. Obviously we haven't had a lot of power plays lately, but yeah, we like them on separate lines, to be honest, because it makes it harder for the other team to defend when they're, you know, they just don't throw their best D pair out against Connor and Leon together and their top defensive line. And then it obviously affects our ability to score down the lineup when we've got it all loaded up on one line.
The other aspect is that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins appears to be going back to play a lot more center. Is that a short-term thing, or do you see that helping you down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing with Ryan is his versatility. So he can play wing on the first line, or he can play center. And I'm not sure if there's going to be like a set plan, and he'll probably go back and forth. I mean, he's good at both. We feel comfortable with him playing both. It allows us to be a little bit flexible with our line. So if he does put Connor and Leon together, Nuge can go to center, and then Adam Henrique would, you know, be like our third line center. There's a scenario maybe too where, you know, Nuge is playing center and so is Leon and so is Connor, you know, like have, and then Adam can also play wing and did a good job for us last season playing up with Connor for a period of time and on some other lines. So one thing about our forward group is a lot of these guys can play multiple positions, or if they're on the wing, they can play either side. So I think Chris is just trying to find a little bit of chemistry right now. So if you've watched our games the last two or three where we've been sort of mixing and matching lines a lot, and I think at some point we'll find that, you know, kind of groove, and we'll leave the lines alone and they'll, you know, develop the chemistry that they need. So hopefully that happens tomorrow night.
Let's not bury the lead. John Shannon's got an opinion.
What's your opinion, John?
I like them separate for that very reason. I think if you have two guys that play 23 minutes, if you don't want them playing 23 minutes together, you want the 46 minutes.
Yeah.
That's in layman's terms, in simple terms, because all those years I coached in the National Hockey League, that's what I...
Where do you keep your Jack Adams awards, John?
I keep them where all the fired coaches keep them, because that does it. Winning the Jack Adams is not an award. It's a curse. Are you kidding me?
I look at it as a little bit bigger picture, Jeff. You're always going to go through this dilemma of having put them together or keep them apart. They're two amazing players who complement each other so well. So there's always going to be that draw to put them together or spread them out. And that's just natural.
Yeah. And it's a good thing, because like they cannot play together for, you know, 5-6 games or 10 games or whatever, which never really happens. They always get shifts together, but they have a chemistry that sort of is always going to be there. And so you can throw them together whenever, but it probably works better to have them apart, and then just sort of when the time is right and they'll jump back out together and do their thing.
The other, you at the break, you brought Matt Savoy up to play. The concept, I assume, was to reward him, correct? But he has some skill.
Yeah, I mean, the plan with Matt straight from the get-go was that we were going to not, you know, yo-yo him around and bring him up. We wanted him to go down and get established in the American League. It's a very harder transition than most people think to go from, you know, junior to the American League and to be able to play at a high level and produce. And it took Matt, you know, it took him a little bit of time to sort of learn how to play pro hockey. It's a big change from junior, where you're a dominant player like he was. And he persevered through a little bit of a rough start where he wasn't producing, but he really, really worked at his game away from the puck, and he's one of our best penalty killers. Colin Chalk and the staff down there, the coaching staff, and Keith Gretzky and our whole player development group spent a lot of time in Bakersfield. He just responded positively to everything that was sort of presented to him through all those various people on our staff. And then he started to click offensively, but not giving up any of his all around game. He's fast. He's strong on his stick. He's got a lot of hockey sense. So yeah, it's a bit of a reward. And we also wanted to see, sort of gauge where he's at. And he's played well in these three games. Our team's hasn't played great as a team, but Stan and I and Chris were talking about it last night. He's an NHL player. Whether he's an NHL player right now, we don't know, but we think we have a really good player, and he's a great kid who just wants to be the best that he can be. So we're really happy with him and where he's at. And, he'll get a few more games here, and then we'll have to make some decisions as we get to the deadline.
Being on the road, did that play a factor in the timing of the recall as a first-year pro, and he just joins the team and goes with the schedule that they're on?
Yeah, it was sort of just the way it lined up. Like, we'd always said maybe after the Four Nations we would, if he continues to play the way he's playing, we could bring him up for a few games and give him a look and let our coaches sort of see his game. And they're all very high on him. So yeah, it was just the way it was. I mean, he's an Edmonton boy. So, he'll get a chance to play presumably when we get home here after the Carolina game, at home, but yeah, it's just, we were on the road.
I was wondering, because he can just play instead of having all the noise around him being a hometown guy.
It's sort of good too, because when you're on the road, you guys know this, like the players are together a lot. They're eating together at, dinners and then pregame meals and breakfast. And for a young guy coming in, like, that allows him to sit with his teammates a lot more than he would at home if he's at his apartment or his parents' home or wherever he's living. And he just come to the rink for a couple hours. This is a good way for him to get integrated into the kind of personality of the team.
You threw him into the deep end though, playing him with Leon though.
Yeah. I mean, he's a skilled player with, good hockey acumen, and it's pressure putting him on that line, but you're also giving him an opportunity to sort of like, show the best that he can, and he hasn't looked out of place. But again, like, we're not going to rush him and jam him in the lineup and expect too much from him. But like, he's shown well, and he's playing with one of the best players in the league, obviously, and has looked at home. So we're happy.
You mentioned the deadline. is there a thought process between now and March 7th?
Yeah, I mean, this starts with all the teams, us included, a couple months ago, where we started to meet as a group with our pro scouting staff. We met early January this year just because of the Four Nations break, and then next week we're back together again. But, just like all the other teams, we have our weekly conference calls, Zoom calls. We go through the entire league and talk about who might be available, what our needs are. And so you're always trying to find a fit, and it's hard sometimes to gauge who's going to move players, because there's lots of teams still in the hunt, so they're not as ready to move players. And then there's some teams who are surprising. They're in the middle of a playoff race and they're willing to move guys. So Stan's been really working the phones. I've had a few calls with teams, with relationships that I have. We're just trying to gauge what everybody's doing and who's going to be moving players, and then making sure that we're keeping ourselves dialed in. If there's an opportunity to make our team better and we can jump at it, then we're ready for it.
Do you have a specific focus?
I would say we're looking for some depth on the forward group, and the same on the back end. Like, we're happy with our D group. They played very well this year. But you can never have enough depth on D, especially if you get into a long playoff run. You know, there's inevitably some injuries and things like that, that, you know, guys get really banged up. So that's sort of probably our primary focus. Probably very similar to a lot of teams, to be honest, like, you know, looking to add depth on D. And on the forward group, like, you know, whether it's a little bit of size and a right shot guy on the bottom six, something like that, gives us some other options to do and a little bit of like size that we may not have.
What's the verdict? How do you feel John Klingberg's contributing?
I think for a guy who hadn't played in a year, like he came in and he played like very well the first few games, and then we had the break, and he was sort of on his own. He stayed in Edmonton, skated with the Oil Kings to keep himself, you know, on the ice and in shape. And I think that what we need from our whole D group, which we didn't have in the first two games that he played in on the trip, he didn't play last night, is just stability so that he can settle in and have a steady partner that they can start to read off of and learn their tendencies. Cause he's a very cerebral player, and having that stability will help him. So, I mean, he's, you know, he's still finding his game. And the good news is, like, you know, he was a player that we were able to get for no assets, and we think he's going to be a contributor to our team, and we're just trying to be patient with his return to, you know, full play.
And Evander Kane?
Yeah, Evander's in his rehab. It's, you know, it's going along. It's sort of the prognosis from the time of the surgery was sort of the end of the season timing wise, like sort of 6 months. And then he had the issue with his knee that was unrelated to any hockey sort of injury. And he had that surgery. So that sort of slowed him down a bit. So I think that probably we're still in the same time frame where we're looking at, you know, he could probably end up coming back to play sometime in the playoffs. But you never know with players. Some guys, like Evander's a very athletic person. So, you know, it may be quicker than that. So, but as we're just taking it week by week, and he's in his injury rehab protocol and following it as closely as he can. And, you know, hopefully we'll get him back here at some point.
I just before we let you go, when you were an agent, you got heavily into the analytics world for your players and for when you talk to teams. Has that changed for you in the position now that you're with a single team and you're dealing with it, or has the analytics aspect of your philosophy grown?
Oh, I'd say it's more so just because, you know, when I came in last year, we didn't really have an analytics group. So I hired Michael Parcati to lead our group. And now we've got, you know, like a group of three or four. Yeah. There's guys in our staff who are doing more of that, who aren't strictly like technically in the analytics group, but they do a lot of it, and they provide us with all kinds of daily information. So, I mean, it's just like I did it on the agent side. You take it as part of the info. You don't rely just like on that only. But yeah, we Stan and I are both like strong believers in just looking at probabilities and things, and then like putting that into the soup of, like, you know, what our team is and what players do. It's just another form of information. So we use it a lot, and I use it even more than I did as an agent.
Have you ever changed an opinion on a player because of numbers that followed suit the eye test?
Well, I don't I don't know if I've changed my mind, but it certainly does open your eyes to just question yourself sometimes. Because sometimes we all have biases about things where, you know, you have an opinion about a player that might have been formed years ago based on how they skated or when you saw them play junior or whatever. And sometimes that is a hindrance to like really looking clearly at a player. So sometimes the numbers will just make you step back and say like, I didn't think that way about that player, but I got to like think about this more. And then you watch them a little bit more carefully and, you know, you may change your opinion on it, or it may just, you know, confirm what you thought. So I guess it just opens your eyes. That's why I like it. It just gives you another like check on your own bias, really.
What was the probability that you walked in the water this morning when you went for your stroll, and did you?
I did not go in the water. Zero probability. But I'm looking out there now. It looks enticing. So maybe this afternoon I'll wander over there. I gotta meet with Stan shortly. So
okay,
we'll see. We got some stuff we gotta do here, but it is nice to look at least.
Hey, listen, well, it's plus eight in Edmonton today, so it's okay.
What is it?
Plus eight.
Oh wow. I think it's warm in Ontario too. I talked to my wife this morning and she said everything was melting. So that's a little different than when I left.
I wanted to bring the golf clubs out today, Jeff.
No. That's good.
Yeah. Well, let's get together and hit the ball around. I promise the golf game will be more fun than today. I want to get together and have some more laughs with you, Jeff.
Yeah, let's do that. I'd love that.
Appreciate it. By the way, analytics, interruptions per 60, John Shannon leads the league. Just in case you're keeping track of that one. There's Jeff Jackson, the CEO of the Edmonton Oilers. So thanks for stopping by.
Appreciate thanks for having me, guys. My pleasure. Yeah.
I asked him what his most stressful job was. I should have also followed it up with, what's the most fun he's ever had?
Oh, don't you think that was last year in the playoffs? I mean that was the magic of the game of playing and being in the game is
that was
the
stressful.
Highs are so bloody high.
The Vancouver series was stressful. The final was stressful.
Winning solves everything. You know, three rounds they won. Oh my gosh!
Stress induced and filled, and your stomach's tied up in knots.
You can see the competitiveness in Jeff even in our conversation, and that's what elite athletes have, and that's what those guys have is how to compete, how to stay focused, and there's fun in all of that, plus the camaraderie. I think, we make light of it sometimes, but I think people love being around the rink, and I think they love being around a group of people that have the same common goal.
Who makes fun of it?
And you can see that. I think people talk about, the boys on the road, you know.
I love it.
I think people, I know. That's one of the highlights of my career was when we were running hockey night was the Friday night dinners. And you'd sit and in the end, you end up having a philosophical discussion, not necessarily just about hockey, or about the teams that we're going to play the next night, but television and how you manage those situations. And they became almost like tutorials.
Who would go to those dinners?
We would have a small group of guys that producers, directors, commentators. But most of them only came because I picked up the check.
did you pick up the tab every Friday night?
Oh, yeah. In those days? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Even to this day, if I see Mickey Redman, who he and I did a lot of work in the 80s together at hockey night, Mickey will come and wax poetic. She says, I miss our Friday night dinners. So.
Who is the most opinionated at those dinners? Producer, director, commentators?
No. I think that was the magic of it, Darren, was that everybody was allowed to have an opinion.
But who is the most opinionated? Who is like on their soapbox every week?
I think it depended. I think it depended on the night. I mean, if you sat with Dave Hodge, you listened more than you spoke. Mm-hmm. But if you, you know, but guys like Gary Dornhofer and Chris Cuthbert and, you know, our directors, they all, everybody had an opinion because that's what you did. It was you that was part being part of the team. And there was an equality in it that everybody understood that the strength of the group was because everybody was at the same level. So that, you know, the commentators would take ideas from the director. The director would listen to the commentators. And then, you know, everybody had to listen to me.
You know who I overlooked for much of my early parts of the career? And before I got into the business, I didn't really pay attention to it at all. But directors. And I appreciate the director as much as anybody now. When you have a great director, it changes the whole show. We have a fantastic director on our shows, and he's fun, and he's creative, and he's willing to listen to you and click over and take a different shot. I love the director.
Wait, what? You're not getting enough close-ups? Is this what you're trying to do? Is brown nose and get more?
No, close-ups? You're right. I don't get enough close-ups. That's true, but I do appreciate the director.
No, I tell you what, listening. A good director, and by the way, I think it's important, and not to get too in-house, but you're fortunate. You probably have the same producer and director in every show.
Yes,
or in Vegas. That's not necessarily the case everywhere, but it's, you know, the fact that you can create that bond between a producer and a director that they actually learn to communicate and exchange ideas with really very little discussion is important to the success of any show. But we're not having a tutorial on broadcasting today. So.
Did you just cut me off?
Yeah, I did.
That's exactly what you did.
I did.
Well, I'm going to save it for the mailbag.
I don't think people are as much interested in that kind of stuff as they are knowing what the Oilers are going to do at the deadline.
We just talked about the Oilers.
Yeah.
And Jeff said depth, which is a great place to be when you're adding depth. That's a sign that you're a contender.
He didn't ask me what I wanted for the Oilers.
What do you... Sorry. 3, 2, 1. John, what would you like for the Oilers?
They need a top six scorer. They need somebody to put with Leon.
So more than depth.
Score goals. More than depth. Yeah, they do, in my opinion. But no. But by the way, nobody's asking me.
Are you part of the Hockey Hall of Fame?
No. No, I'm a member of the BC Hockey Hall of Fame.
You should be part of the Hockey Hall of Fame as a broadcaster. Why?
No.
Because of your contribution.
Okay, so now let's go talk about production and direction again, because I'm not talking about that.
On Friday, I'm going to keep track of this for another couple of days. But on Friday, remind me to evaluate the play that we've witnessed coming out of the break. Because so far, it's a lot clunkier than I anticipated. And I just want to give it another couple
of hockey's
days.
Clunkier?
Yeah, it's been unpredictable. There's been some real different performances or unexpected performances around the National Hockey League. So I want to give it another couple of days.
I don't like the word clunky. That's not a good word for it.
I love clunky.
No, I think it's been unpredictable. I agree with that. But I think there's been great drama every night. Great storylines every night. You know, even on Monday night where there was only two games, you know, the Jets come from behind victory and then the Kings come from behind victory against the Golden Knights. I mean, and you know, two storylines that you're going, holy smokes, you can't take any time off here. This is going to be wild.
Just got a text from somebody saying, I'm not in the camp that somebody's going to beat Ovi's record in our lifetime. It's funny that we're recording this as I get a text from somebody about that. And I'm right with them. So, John, you're on an island there. Sorry. Again.
What are you talking about?
Alexander Ovechkin.
Yeah, he's going to break the record.
Huh? Yeah, but nobody's breaking his record.
Oh, no.
Anytime.
I'll give you a name, too.
Who?
Auston Matthews.
No, it's not going to happen.
Okay.
I don't know why you ever brought that up the other day without giving
Ovi time
have
to...
To soak it in. Yeah, we actually do need a meeting every now and then. John, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for connecting us with Jeff Jackson.
Jeff likes your wife.
So. Yeah. Yeah. He's not the the only one. She's the better half of this arrangement.
True. Okay.
You like her too, right?
She's a lovely woman.
Even though you were mean to her one time?
Stop. Okay, it's time to go.
Okay.
It's time to go.
John, have a great day.
Sure.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team, and the Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Digital cues and prices jumping at checkout can get in the way of you and a great seat. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. It's easy to use, and the Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. You can snag new ticket deals before anyone else by following your favorite teams or get a panoramic view of the view from your seat, all right from the app. Plus, you can save even more with zone deals by choosing a section and letting Game Time choose the seats. No matter what, your purchase is covered with the most flexible customer service policy in the ticketing industry. Take the guesswork out of buying sports tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.